Okay, we're in the court, please. It is 5:02, we're beginning our study session on general fees. It's March 26th. Gary, it's your show.
Thanks, Paul. Very quickly, I'm going to set tonight up. We're discussing general facility fees, we're not discussing impact fees. We promised you at the last city council meeting that we would have something back to you for the agenda on your first meeting in April. This is, this information tonight is to help help you and us make a recommendation, a decision at that meeting if that's what you want to do. Now this is going to be different than any work session we've ever done with you. And here's the way it's going to lay out. First of all, John is going to spend a few minutes giving you some general information that you've heard before, but it's kind of an update on what can be done and what cannot be done with general facility fees, addressing some of the questions that you have asked in the past. Then, Raven and Michael and I are going to each take turns and present you with an alternative. Raven's going to talk, well, I won't tell you what she's, well, I will. Raven is going to propose that the impact fees be reinstituted immediately, and I'll let her tell you the rest. I'm going to propose that we just leave them the way they are, and Michael is going to have kind of an in-between the two of us.
A hybrid.
Proposal that might work. It's not a debate in the sense that we're going to question each other or anything like that. We're just going to give a presentation for you, which addresses maybe some of the key points and why you would do one of these or another. I've asked Paul today if it would be okay if the council held back any questions until we're all finished, because if we get into one, we'll be here all night just on one issue. So that's. We only have an hour to do this, 55 minutes to do this, and so I'm going to turn it over to John, and he's going to spend a few minutes with you.
Okay. General facility fee. What that is, what you can and can't do, and what it isn't. It is not an impact fee. So impact fees fall under a whole statutory section of the state law. Hearing me okay, or should I speak closer? You can't hear me. Okay. I'll speak closer. Is that better?
Yeah.
Impact fees, what they are, excuse me, general facility fees, what they are not, and what you can do and cannot do with regard to general facility fees. We're separating impact fees. That is a special fee set up by statute. Certain rules and requirements related to them. They are designed to impact project-related impacts. It's not what we're discussing tonight. General facility fees are basically, at their core, an ability for the utility, and here it's the City of Blaine, to recover its capital charges or anticipated capital costs related to the development of the infrastructure and the long-term capital replacement or long-term maintenance charge. Call it depreciation if you're in the expense in the accounting world, but it is not your ordinary maintenance and repair expense, which is built into your rates and fees. So what you can and cannot do with regard to general facility fee, it has to be uniform and it has to be equitable amongst the various users. Generally, they are scaled, and what I mean by scaled is that they are assessed based upon the projected demand of the type of user. You will generally find a general facility fee or connection fee set in the fashion that it's related to a standard, supported by a rate study, oftentimes. It is typically equated to a residential equivalency. So in the sewer context, you would say a resident, single-family residence, typically has X amount of impact on the system and requires X amount of treatment. X amount of impact, Y amount of treatment. We then take that and you look at a restaurant or a gas station or type of hotel or type of apartment complex or whatever the use might be, and say, what's the equivalency based upon comparables and experiences, real or in other communities, real in this city or experienced in other communities, and how does that equate to a standard single-family residence? And then you scale your general facility charge based upon that standard of residential equivalency. That's this common formula. Doesn't have to be the only method. There could be others, but that's the most commonly used methodology. They are typically applied at the time of connection, and that's the kind of the real short summary of general facility charges. They must be uniform, they must be fair and equitable, as among all types of potential users. There is not an exemption provision, as there may exist in impact fees, unless you can find the fair and uniform and equitable way to have the exemption, and we would test that.
And I wanted to make sure John brought that up, because I answered that question incorrectly at the last council meeting, stating that you could exempt a certain type of business. You might be able to set those rates lower, but you can't exempt it at all. The rates have to be based on a study and an analysis.
Lower for that particular type of...
For instance, if I had a... come up with, imagine a use that has incredibly low sewer demand. One toilet and you have no customers coming in and it's just one person working there. Well, that's less than a single-family residence, and you would argue that I should be charged 0.3 of a sewer connection because that's my impact. Then we would say, okay, if you ever change your use, you've got to come back and pay us a higher fee potentially, and we'll monitor that through the building permit application process. That's how someone goes from a single-family house to a duplex, because the zoning allows it. You now have to go buy a second connection for the duplex when you change your use. But you're buying into the capital facility that the city has paid for. You can pay for that in different ways. You could go many different ways, and it does not have, you do not, are not required to have a general facility charge either. You can structure the your own accounting and capital reserves and however you want to fund that as law may allow you, but you're not required to have a general facility charge.
But, and I have a short, very readable memo on that for your time. 5 minutes.
Awesome. I get 10 minutes.
And you called the punchline before we got out.
Okay. First of all, just you need to know that the presentations that we're making today do not necessarily reflect our personal opinions. They reflect an alternative. Now, when I started to explore the council's question as to whether we should increase the general facility fee back to some point above zero from the resolution that you passed in August 2010, I have to be honest and tell you that I had every intention of recommending that we increase the fee back up to where it was, at least in 2010. The only question I had was whether it should be incrementally phased over a period of time or whether it should just be increased during initial period and then raised back to where it was in 2010. So I began thinking about how to present a case for my predisposed recommendation. I started to realize, however, as I began to write and to think about this, that there might actually be a case for keeping things the way they are. When I got to the point of writing my recommendation, and I had about 500 handwritten pages, and when I got to the point where, therefore, I recommend, when I got to that point, I put my pen down, and I honestly sat there and kind of put my head in my hands and said, you know, I need to think about this. This isn't as simple as I thought it was, what it was going to be. So I thought about it, and I concluded that we should leave the GFF fee at its current level, which is $0 for both water and sewer, until the five-year commitment that the council made ends in August of 2014. And at that time, we can go through a similar evaluation as we are this evening and decide whether what we're going to do or what you're going to do with these fees. Now, let me tell you how I got to that recommendation. For the past few months, I've been working with a large Bellingham manufacturing company, which is looking to relocate away from Bellingham. They want to find some property to buy and build a new manufacturing facility because their own property that's being leased, it isn't for sale. They don't like their location, and they want to go somewhere else. I began talking to them, I don't know, 6-8 months ago. They were introduced to me by a citizen in the community, and they were looking at different locations, and they finally got to the point where they were looking at Blaine and Ferndale. And we're going to decide between our two communities. they didn't make a firm commitment, but they were leaning very heavily towards Blaine. They would buy 6 acres north of Bobbitt Street at the airport. They would build a fairly large new facility and employ about 90 people in the community. And they would look favorably on our property for three reasons: the availability and cost of the land, the property is fully served, and we had no GFF or impact fees. Now, the company has delayed its decision to locate outside of Bellingham until the economy improves. But this example, like others that I run into, is they're usually a competitive process where potential businesses are looking at several sites, and in the case of Blaine and Ferndale, we have very similar community attributes. The only advantage that we had over Ferndale was zero impact fees. They had property. Their property was reasonably priced, and depending on the piece of property, it was less than ours, but some of theirs had full service as well. So the only difference between us and them was that we did not have general facility fees or impact fees. And this company was very clear about that. They were very clear that, they were also very clear that on again and off again discussions about changing the fees created an uncertainty and a risk that for the size of the commitment that they were going to make was not workable. And they called me up several times and said, "What are you going to do?" And my response was, "Well, I'm not sure what we're going to do." Looking back to August 2010, the council, after much discussion, reduced the GFF and impact fees to zero in a hope that it would provide an incentive for business and economic growth in the community. If the council had a choice, they would have only put it on commercial and industrial and not residential. That was my read. They were told that our legal counsel said you can't do that. You cannot distinguish between those uses. As John explained, you can have a varying rate, but you can't exempt somebody. So we implemented this, and frankly, it has not been very successful. To my knowledge, we cannot pick one business that has located in Blaine as a result of not having a general facility fee.
I can.
Which one?
Ken Imus would not have come here.
Could we wait?
I'm sorry. I just wanted.
That's not.
That was.
Yeah, that's not true. But and the impact on residential housing has been very modest, yeah. And there may be a correlation there. But it at this point has not been substantial. And there's a reason for that. The reason is the economy. The incentive that we created could not overcome the disincentive that was created by an economy that was in the tub. You know, and you know that the high unemployment rates, the failure in the financial institution foreclosures, high housing inventories, all of those things overpowered the idea that you get no GFF fees in the area. So they did not work very well over the last 2 years, which has changed, but you have to ask the question, what has changed? How come if they didn't work then, they're going to work now? The answer is that generally nothing has changed. We still have an economy that's only showing very modest changes. Employment is still high. It's improving, but it's still high. Housing inventories are still high. Building is beginning to improve a little bit. Banks are lending a little more, but you need to have a job to get a loan. So there have been some change in the right direction, but nothing huge is really happening. So the best that we can expect in housing in our community is somewhere between 20 and 30 new residential permits a year. At $8,000 for water and sewer, we're talking about $160,000 to $250,000 a year that we would forego if we kept the impact, the general facility fees at zero. Now this isn't chump change. $250,000 is not chump change. So what do we get that offsets us foregoing that revenue? We know that we can't distinguish between uses, so what offsets the revenue loss? The answer is the opportunity to attract business and especially industry to the area justifies foregoing the revenue for the next 2 years. Though we've not seen any benefit to speak of from the GFF decision in 2010, we are seeing a lot of investor interest in Blaine and the Blaine area today. The strong Canadian economy, Asian investors looking for the security of putting their money in the United States, relatively inexpensive land prices in this area, and the fact that there isn't much of this type of property left on the West Coast at this price leads me to believe that the chances of attracting a business to our area is higher than it was 2 years ago. But to do so, we need to have an incentive beyond that, which every other community can offer. Without such an incentive, we do not compete well with Ferndale and Linden. So it's a risk. We don't have a strong history that this is going to work. But if we are successful in attracting a good-sized plant of 100 or 50 to 100 jobs and several million dollars in land and building improvements over the long term, we'll come out ahead with sales tax and property tax, utility taxes, housing market will improve, small businesses will improve through the indirect benefits that will occur. So I guess my bottom line is it's a risk, but I think it's a risk worth taking.
Andy, so I get to relay a different side of the story, and kind of looking at this with a fresh set of eyes, as you know. I don't have any history with GFFs. I wasn't here in 2009 when the decision to reduce them was made. However, I have had an opportunity to look at the Public Works budget and look at our water and sewer funds, which the sewer especially is at its greatest point in debt right now in terms of the new facility bond and the construction being complete. That debt, you know, just like when you're buying a car or a house, you're paying the bigger amount of that interest to start, and our debt is at its highest point now. Last year, November 2011, you were presented a rate study that talked a little bit about phasing back in the GFFs and also kind of a look at the capital picture if these fees are not reinstituted. Even though that study was very conservative, it is still showing that the burden of capital facilities without the GFFs is going to fall on the ratepayers. Typically, you want development to pay for development, and the ratepayers should be paying for the ongoing maintenance and operations, but we are now putting a greater reliance on our ratepayers to fund the capital debt that we've created. As a result, what you're going to be seeing is projects that are necessary projects that are part of our comprehensive plan being deferred. There's a cost to the water and sewer funds in the last 3 years. Because of water GFFs not being built, we have not received $185,303. And for the sewer GFFs, we will not build over $400,000. So for a total of almost $600,000 since 2009. As you heard Gary say, the reason for the GFFF reduction has not been realized. We have not yet seen a market increase in development as a result. He also said that we can't compete with Ferndale and Linden without it. I disagree. I think that Blaine has a lot to offer that Linden and Ferndale don't. The other thing I wanted to communicate was that, because you don't know me really well yet, I'm a fiscal conservative. I make a pledge to you that when I come and report to you about projects or funding, that I'll give you a fair assessment of the risk as well as the long-term sustainability and liability that we need to look out for. So according to that kind of logic, the risk that we have with reinstituting the fee today would be the potential industrial customers that might go to Ferndale or Linden. What I see the real risk, however, is that our utilities don't have a rainy day fund. We're deferring necessary projects. We're potentially limiting our bonding capacity by not paying down that debt faster. And frankly, that we're putting off the inevitable, that there could be an increase in rates that is going to be required all at once because that we're deferring that particular source of revenue today. And that's something that I would prefer as Public Works Director to not have to bring to you. So for these reasons, I recommend that the fee be reinstated immediately to the 2009 rates with an ample notice period that is determined by the council, to be fair.
I guess I get to bat cleanup, but I hopefully don't drive their points home. I have actually two recommendations. And the first one applies no matter who you listen to, and it is, whenever you do, put the issue to rest. Decide, and decide once and for all, to stop talking about it. And I say that because predictability is very important to builders and developers. Continued discussion creates an unpredictable development climate, and it's not healthy. You're trying to incentivize development by the practice and the decision that was made, but with people not knowing if a fee is coming back next month, next council meeting, or 3 weeks from now, or 6 months from now, they can't bank on it. And a developer, a builder, an investor has to be able to bank on something. So the city needs to provide a predictable, stable, and attractive development climate. We're not doing that right now. A possible fee in the future is just as bad as a fee here today. In fact, and from the perspective of a developer, I would say it's worse because they don't know what they're banking on, and there's a risk. A fee could come back, and it could come back bigger. They just don't know. So whatever you decide, I implore you, from the perspective of someone who's dealing with the developers, dealing with the home builders, dealing with people who are looking to invest in our community and are trying to weigh the factors, decide one way or the other. Even if your decision is to not reinstate the fees, put it to rest so that they can get bank on it and we can say, no, council has decided. They've put the issue to rest. They're going to wait until this date, and that's when the issue will be addressed again. But now to my other recommendation. I look back and I thought, why were the GFFs eliminated? Well, they were eliminated to incentivize commercial development. And I also think at the time there was a part of that decision was to increase population to support a larger commercial base. it was important at that time in some of the discussions that I heard here in this room that it wasn't just about having some businesses come in, but it was about having enough people out there to make those businesses successful, a thriving downtown, a full shopping center. What have we seen since then? Very modest commercial development. We've essentially had one fairly good-sized commercial project go in, and that's Mercer. And I would tell you that they're not here because our GFFs were low. Perhaps their business was more profitable. Perhaps they were able to do some things a little differently. Maybe they financed things differently. Maybe they made a little more money, although I think they borrowed a lot of money to make it happen. But they made some different business decisions because they didn't have GFFs. But they're here because of our location. Our location right by the border, right by customs, and right by the people who need to inspect the facilities or the things coming in. So location was the deciding factor, not the GFFs. We've seen modest residential development, and builders have told us that they are building here because it's cheaper. They're building in Blaine now, and they're building spec homes in Blaine when very few spec homes are being built anywhere. Because they have more capacity to absorb risk because they're not paying those fees. So by not paying the water fee and the sewer fee, they have about $9,000 or so to play the market, if you will. Many of those developers are these builders are small builders. They're local folks or they're people from the region. They're not big companies with lots of money that swept in and are building hundreds of homes. We all know that. But a lot of them are doing that out of their own pockets. And by not having that extra money to pay, it makes it a little easier and it makes it possible for them to build spec houses. Even though the housing construction industry is basically in the tank everywhere, it's still very depressed. We're at about 60 to 70% of the average pre-boom years. So going back to 2001, 2002, 2003, around that time frame, we're back now to about 60 to 70% of that building. And I think in part that's because there are no GFFs. Who benefits? Well, for the commercial project, I'd say the business owner and the developer. Sometimes the business owner builds the business and the facility for themselves. Sometimes the developer builds it for them, like a build-to-suit scenario. I think that either or benefits from that scenario. Some of the benefits probably pass to the public with an increased tax base, with a monthly fee that's paid to the utility. But the reality is it takes quite a bit to make up for the lost GFF. On the residential end, it's a similar thing. I think primarily the home builder gets the benefit because I believe that the market dictates what that house is worth and not what the home builder put into it. It doesn't really matter all that much how much you put into the house. It really matters what the people out there are willing to pay for the house. So in my theory, the home builder gets the majority of that. Some of it's probably passed on to the buyer because they have a little more negotiating room. They might be willing to come down a bit, but I don't think that we're really seeing most of that money going as a savings to the buyer. Does the public benefit? Perhaps a little bit, a little bit more in the tax rolls because there's another house constructed. Do the local businesses benefit? Possibly. There are more people to buy things. But generally, single-family construction and residential construction as a whole doesn't tend to pay its fair share and cover the burden of carrying it. It typically requires a retail tax base and other taxes to really make up the difference. So getting to my recommendation, I recommend that you reinstate the fees by phasing them in. I believe that these fees are necessary over the long term to honor the debt service without undue reliance on monthly rates. I also think that council passed a resolution, had the mayor sign that resolution, and that resolution said the city would honor a five-year commitment on this. I think that the city should honor that five-year commitment, and the city should be a stabilizing force and should be seen as standing behind its commitments. I also think that the city should capitalize on the idea of the incentive to beat a deadline. Every time there's a discussion at council about the fees, it triggers a rumor mill that we experience and we see in our office. Builders call and they stop in and find out when the fees are going up or are the fees are going up. What did council say? What are they doing? What are they thinking? They want to know what's happening, and we don't know. The fees could change at any time. It just takes one quick ordinance. So what we say is there are no fees now, but council is discussing the issue. We
can't read your minds and we don't know what's going to happen. All we can tell them is today the status quo is this. We have no fees and council is discussing it. The deadlines that builders have perceived, whether those are real or imagined, have triggered some of them to act. That action has caused some homes to be built sooner than they would have otherwise been built, thereby adding to the tax rolls, generating sales tax by local, but through the building process, and generating the permit fees. So people have come in and done things because they thought the fee was coming in. What I would say is that you reinstate the fees in a phased process. Whether you do that in two steps or three steps or however you want to structure it doesn't matter. If it were a three-step process, I would say institute it August 24th of 2012 in the first third. That's 3 years from the date it was passed. The ordinance was passed August 24th. On the same date in 2013, add another third and have a two-thirds fee. And then on the same date in 2014, which is 5 years out from the initial commitment, reinstate the fee in full. And again, whether you do that in a two-step, a three-step, or whatever step process, you would be able to, in some ways, honor the five-year commitment by not reinstating the fees in full until that time frame. You would set a structure in place so that we are able to say, this is the fee structure you have until August 24th of this year. You have until August 24th of the following year, or whatever it happens to be, and people know. And I guess that's really all I have to say, but going back to my initial statement, which was, I really implore you to put the issue to rest. Thanks.
Okay, what I'd like to do now is to take questions from the council, but in the hope of having an orderly process, perhaps I could recognize you, waiting to be recognized, and each of us in turn will have our turn. Bonnie, you have a question?
Not right now.
Charlie.
Michael, you're basically saying your recommendation would be either to wait to the 5 years and start it over or start phasing it in now?
My recommendation really would be to phase it in instead of sort of shocking the system and then picking the phase back in. Like I say, you could do that in a number of steps, whether it's two steps or three steps, whatever you want to do it. I just pulled out the idea of three steps, starting in August 24th. At the 5 year commitment.
Who's next? Ken?
No, I think I understand the three arguments. I don't have any questions.
My goodness. Dennis?
I guess.
With Dennis first, then Shirley.
Raven, a question for you, maybe. You made a statement that the ratepayers, basically their role is to pay for maintenance. So any new demands as far as capital should be the result of the, be the responsibility of the developer?
That's right. That's the way it should be done.
Okay.
Otherwise, we already have, I believe, one of the highest sewer rates in the state. We don't want to make a world record out of it. We want to have development pay for development, and so therefore new capital should be paid by new development.
Okay. Shirley?
Raven, do you see or foresee like us having to raise the rates sewer rate in order just to for the debt service? I mean, if not, we're not maintaining this $100 a month. Is that a possibility or a possibility?
You know, I think the answer to that would be depending on how bad of a rainy day we have. The sewer fund is very tight. The rate that we have now that were adopted as a part of the rate study are conservative. They don't leave a lot of cushion. And they certainly don't leave a lot in terms of new sewer. So pretty much everything that you're seeing that we're doing with that relates to our wastewater system is still under the two grants that we use for the Lighthouse Point facility. They're not out of existing.
I think that one piece of information that is interesting in the sewer fund is that when it comes time to the point that we have to make a bond payment, the cash flow in the fund doesn't cover that at that point. And so last year we had to borrow from the water fund to make the debt payment and then pay the water fund back as the sewer rates came in. So that the cash flow is, it does, it's not cash flowing, is basically what you're saying. And Raven's point on future debt is that when you go out and try to raise money on the bond market, especially for utilities, is they look at what they call coverage. And what they look for is the coverage of water and sewer, for example, should be somewhere between 2 and 2.5. That means that you should be collecting 2.5 times the cost of operating your system. Mm-hmm. And right now, I don't think that we have one-to-one. If we have one-to-one, that's probably the size we're going to go. I mean, we're basically collecting what we spend.
Yeah, I spoke to Jeff on this last Friday, and he said that our debt payment is in June, and Gary is right. To make that payment, we're actually pulling other funds together, and that for every dollar that we have in our rate, 50% of that goes to debt. So that kind of answers Gary's question.
Clerk?
I think this question probably needs to be answered by Mr. Sitkin. If I understand, is everybody's got to pay the same. We've reinstated, everybody's reinstated. My question to you is, where Gary has ongoing negotiations with someone that wants to move here, is there a piece of paper that can be generated that would contract that into the future, and then we can go ahead and raise the rate?
Let me separate that into two compartments. One on the contract issue, which is a business deal.
Yeah.
Potentially, since you own the property, you're in a unique situation at the airport. The other side of the timing of the payment. As I mentioned, typically your payment would be paid at the time of connection. It's usually administered through the building permit pickup. At some point, either application or pickup, or it's half paid early, half paid later,
picked up.
So there is no vesting to a fee for general facility charge. So if someone made an application for a building permit on June 1st, finished their building on August 1st, and on July 30th you had raised the GFF and they hadn't paid it, and it was effective, they'd pay the higher fee. Just like an impact fee doesn't vest, you don't vest into your GFF. You could move into an earlier payment in the building permit process so that you paid it when it was vested, so the you would get the money earlier, and they would lock in that fee. I mean, that's part of your ordinance structure, but I don't know whose argument it would have been, but that may be a disincentive to a property owner, because they're having to finance the GFF then, and they don't want to do that. They want to push it out to the end of the time if they're going to pay it. So how do we deal with this manufacturer? You can't lock them in that under the traditional GFF process until they come in and pull their connection and have a whatever time you've said you pay for your connection. Now, I'm going to go off the rail a little bit. You know, you could create options in your ordinance that says if you want to pay earlier and lock it in at the time of application, you have that option. You could give a property owner an option of early payment, later payment, and lock it in. The city gets the benefit of the cash earlier, and they can manage their risk. Giving them the option may be a valuable, flexible tool for them. They can make the business decision of carrying the cost of the GFF. On the contract side and the business side of your property ownership, you can negotiate a lot of things. Including who pays. But that would then reflect back on your value, potentially.
Gary? I guess a two-part question. And I'm being facetious, when we looked at this and we were led to believe that by now we would be rolling in so much tax dollars that we wouldn't be able to count them all. Let me ask the question. We've lost, I believe, $585,000 because we entered into this scheme.
592?
592.
Okay, Michael, how many tax dollars did we get to offset this $592,000 that we've lost on? Are we getting a great flow of dollars coming in from these residential properties?
I want to make sort of a little bit of a wisecrack, but I have no idea is the answer. We don't track tax dollars in our office. We review development proposals. Jeff could probably look at that from, you know, the assessor's roles, but I just don't have the information.
Okay. Now the second part of the question is, we said we're now getting 60% of the residential development that we got post 2009.
No, pre-building.
Pre and post. I'm getting old, so I get these things.
It's pre-boom, not pre-decision.
Okay, pre-boom. We don't know, though, how many of those we would have gotten in any event. In other words, I look around, there's got to be people that wanted to build a home that weren't influenced. There might be the odd guy come in and decide to build a spec house. But a lot of that 60% would have been homes that would have been built regardless of whether we charged the fees or didn't charge the fees.
I would say yes and no. The majority of the homes that we're seeing built are spec homes. That's not the case in most communities. So the majority of the homes are spec homes. That is different, I think, that some degree that is driven by the lack or the zero fee. Would those homes have been built anyway? Or sooner or later would they have been built? Yes. I think they probably would have. But I do think that it is definitely happening. Most of the homes that are being built right now are not homes that are being built for an owner that wants to occupy the right way.
The obvious question, if any of the spec houses have been sold yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of them have.
I guess, just making a statement, I don't think we've recovered much in the way of tax dollars to offset our $592,000.
No, I agree, and that's what I was saying, is that you don't make that much in tax dollars from a home. It takes a great deal.
We were anticipating a lot of commercial development, which might have generated that, which has not occurred. Shirley?
Is this about spec houses? To me, that seems that's one of the causes of the problems you have when you build spec houses and you're not building for people that are going to eventually move into it. When we're basing our policies on for speculative builders, we're not doing for the benefit of the residents of Blaine, from my standpoint.
Any other questions?
Bonnie? Just to address Charlie's comment, I think most of the spec homes are not being built for rentals. I think they're being built to sell. And I think, you know, there have been a few that have sold, probably at least half. It was my understanding that there was one developer that did come into Blaine because of the lack of GFFs. And that, at least he told me, he was very firm, just won't do it unless you eliminate your GFFs for a period of time at least. I think it's important to honor our commitment. We're not legally bound to, but I think it's important that we honor it until 2014 with no increases until then, and then we ramp to what it was originally. I think that's an important thing to do. The unfortunate thing is that the way our enterprise funds are set up, each has to support itself. And in the case of the sewer fees, which are so extremely high, anyway, it's not like we can just pour money into that and not affect the ratepayers. But I wish there was a way we could. Our water fund is pretty healthy, and I know we have borrowed from it, but I'd like to see if there's a way we can continue, if we need to borrow from the water fund and not raise the ratepayers. I don't want to see that happen. And if there's a way to do that, I just think it's important to honor our commitment. I think we have seen some benefit. I would like to see some calculations done by our finance director. It may be more than we think with X
excise taxes and property taxes and sales taxes added up between the commercial development we've seen and residential. So I would like to see some of those numbers before we make a decision.
If somebody has a cell phone turned on, could you please turn it on?
The mayor just did. It's
okay. The mayor just did. Okay. Dennis first and then Charlie.
What's the potential for an increase cost to the residents if the GFF is not reinstated?
Well, I think the last rate study, Raven, I don't know if you have it there, but the last rate study that I saw, our rate peaks next year, I think. It was,
I think so.
Right. Yeah, it was like a dollar more or something next year, and it peaks, and then from that point, it goes down. Not a great deal, but it does, we reverse the direction a little bit at that point. So that's kind of what we're looking at right now.
But sure. Sorry. Is that based on what assumptions? Because if you assume that nothing's going to change, it looks to me like it's going to get worse for the people that are paying rates now. I don't see how it could be better.
Well, there's some debt falling off. I think that's, if you look at the debt curve, you have more than one bond issue that's in there in the sewer. So you have the debt that we just got for the water reclamation facility, and then that came in on top of debt that we already had. And so as you pay off the older debt, the whole curve kind of drops down. And I think that's what's happening, is that it peaks, and then that old debt is paid down, and then you have that new level.
Charlie first, then Clark.
One of the things I asked Steve this last year, that because we didn't have that rate, I was, how much was it we were paying, the people that live here now are paying a month to subsidize the people that are putting in the hookup fees. It was like $3.50 a month, mm-hmm. that we're paying, all of us are paying, so that somebody could build a spec house. And I think that's wrong. From my standpoint.
Clark?
I'm not sure I've kept up with it. In the last 2 years, how many new businesses have done this, do you think, because of the fee? And how many spec homes? How many spec homes have been built right now because of this? Do you know?
In 2010, there were 27 homes built in land, yeah. new housing units, and in 2011, there were 21. How many of those were built for owner-occupied, or how many of them were built for someone to sell to an owner?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay.
But I don't have the statistic.
Houses.
But there were about 48 houses in the past 2 years. And
okay.
I think a fair portion of those are people building them who are willing to take the risk that they might not have a buyer right away.
So
different than if I build a house for you and you're going to go buy it here.
Yeah.
You just purchase it for me immediately upon completion.
So how many businesses do you think came here because of that?
I don't know of any that made that as their deciding factor, but you don't know of all the people's decisions.
Is it not safe to assume that that would be the real benefit of what's happened? You get the businesses here that pay them most, and you ultimately feel that they'll yield more for the community, and since that didn't happen, then it worked.
I think the reason council initiated it primarily was to trigger new businesses to move into town and make a big investment.
Just so that we don't leave Bonnie hanging, the one business that she's referring to, Ken Imus, and Mr. Imus was involved in the decision to to lower the GFF fees, and I think it certainly made an impact on his decision to stick around and buy a bunch of additional property in the community. The one business, the Black Forest, was constructed in a facility that didn't have to pay a GFF. Regardless of what you did, they would not have had to pay a GFF because there was a pre-existing water and sewer connection there. So it didn't make, the GFF fee itself didn't make any difference to that project, the construction project. It did make a difference to Mr. Imus investing in the community. Mm-hmm.
Can I clarify one? Just on the heels of that, it's not expand upon that, not clarify. The reason why he didn't have that person didn't have to pay a GFF is because the meter sizing, which is how it's managed for sewer, did not have to be expanded to serve a restaurant. So there was an adequate capacity for that facility. If it was a smaller meter, like a single-family residence, they would have had to buy a larger meter and would have paid a GFF for that change in use. But that location didn't require a different size meter, so it was considered the GFF had been paid when they put the meter in.
Okay, Ken first, then Harry.
Well, originally I thought the idea here was we're supposed to be asking questions for clarification. A number of us have sort of already made statements as to where we are on this. So I guess my question is, what is our procedure from here? Because there's a lot of things I'd like to discuss about this. I just don't have any questions of fact I need to ask you at this point. I'd like to sort of know what the plan is.
Well, I think we hope to give you information this evening. You know, to hear the alternatives and the what we think are the information to support them, that the various alternatives. I think that it's appropriate that, you know, everybody kind of go back and think about it. And then when we come together again on the first meeting in April, that we continue this discussion. Maybe by then you have additional questions that that you have for us. And depending on where you are at that time, you might make a decision or you might delay it until some other point if you want additional information. So I see this as kind of the first step, getting the alternatives out for you so that you know what your choices are.
Which is great. I appreciate it. We have 5 minutes to six. I'd like a couple minutes before the meeting starts, so I'd really like to
draw this up. But just a second. We have Harry and then Dennis.
Just a very quick thing for the next discussion. Could we look at the ordinance that we passed to see if there is some specific wording in there about us having a five-year extension? And if there is no wording in the actual ordinance, could we review the minutes to determine what our discussion was at that particular time? I recall asking the question whether if there was a new council that they were obligated to continue the program till 2014, and the answer given at that time was no, that there was no guarantee that the new council would support the concept of maintaining the program to 2014. I'd just like to get the exact wording that was used at that particular time, and that might be beneficial.
Dennis?
I think Michael's right. It was an ordinance to change the fee because you had to change the structure of your code in the unified fee schedule that set that to zero. Then you passed your separate resolution, as I recall, that said the intent of the council was to keep it for 5 years. And even if you hadn't passed that resolution, I would say now, as I said then, I believe that this council does not bind a future council as to the fees that you may set. You can't. Otherwise, the council could say, you'll never raise a fee in forever and ever in 200 years, and you'd be functionless as a council.
Dennis, this is for John. John, you mentioned it has to be uniform and equitable.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a differential system, how
as between classes of users.
Between classes.
Uniform as to the type of user. Meaning, a duplex does not have the same demand as a single-family residence. Okay. A Buick goes more gas than a Miata. I mean, it's a different demand, and so you can classify the type of business or use, so that as between the type of users or the class of users, you can categorize it. Your code, and the state law, and I think your code already sets forth a number of those factors.
So if you had a system where you based everything on flow, that would be the most equitable?
Not necessarily, because it's the type of flow, too. I mean, you got a lot of grease, say, in a restaurant that may have a certain amount of, I'm using sewerage as an example. You might have different components for certain type of a home versus certain types of business that may have a different demand and different amount of flow. So you, there is a formulaic system that is usually developed in the industry, and your code reflects that presently. And so you'd go back to your code. If you're going to look at establishing a fee, I'd say just go back to your code or go do a separate rate study.
Okay, we're getting close to the end of our time. Gary, is there anything further you need from us?
Not unless, if you have any additional work you want us to do before April, let us know. Sometime during the meeting tonight, it doesn't have to be right now.
Okay, any further questions, or shall we declare the study session closed? The study session is closed.
I would like...